Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, produced in New England at WHUS Stores. TalkNation.org for news and discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Our guest today is historian Gareth Porter. Our topic, a negotiated withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq. Porter is an expert on negotiated settlements to war. He's written about wars in Vietnam, Cambodia, and the Philippines. Even as we spoke, AP reported that the top commander in Iraq, General George Casey, says there could be a fairly substantial pullout of U.S. forces starting this spring. Gareth Porter's research paper on what he calls the third choice in Iraq, a responsible exit strategy, appears in the September issue of Middle East Policy. Gareth Porter, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you, Dori.
Let me ask you to begin with why you think it is possible to pursue peace talks and a withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq at this time.
Well, you know, when I first wrote about this, it was based on just the very first indications that there was some interest on the part of some leaders of the armed opposition, the armed resistance to the occupation in Iraq. Since then, we have really much more evidence, much fuller and more convincing evidence that indeed there is great interest on the part of a number of very major organizations, the armed organizations in Iraq, in negotiating with the United States for a peace agreement, which would in fact end their resistance, as well as have provisions for withdrawal of U.S. troops on a timetable. So really what's happened now is that you have some of the intermediaries, Sunni intermediaries, including a former Iraqi minister of the interim government, the U.S. Created interim government, basically, Ayham al-Samari, who has a business in Chicago. He's an engineer. He was the minister of electricity in the Ayatollahi government, who is actually in business in the United States, and clearly a member of the democratic opposition, not someone who's associated with the armed struggle at all, who has now told about his contacts with the insurgent leaders. So it makes it much more convincing that there is a real opportunity here, which it would be absolutely criminally negligent to simply avoid the opportunity to go ahead and test it. And he has given a rather detailed account on more than one occasion to the press of his contacts with resistance leaders. And he claims that there are four major organizations which account for a very large proportion. Of course, no one knows exactly what proportion, but he says it's very substantial proportion. He claims even a majority of the people in the resistance who have told him, who've given him their conditions for basically surrendering and going into legal political life in Iraq. And of course, the major condition is the withdrawal of U.S. troops on a timetable. But what he has said, which is perhaps most surprising, is that these leaders have indicated that they're willing to allow the United States to stay for at least a year in order to provide for a transition, understanding that it would be desirable not to have just a sudden disappearance of the troops, but to have a process in which the two sides are going through fulfillment of the peace agreement rather than a sudden withdrawal of U.S. troops.
Standing in the way of the idea of peace talks, negotiations, and the U.S. pullout is this thought about an Iraqi civil war. Would you talk a little bit about what kinds of considerations you gave to that problem?
Well, exactly. This is the great fear that I think many Americans have, including most, I would say, most of those who are opposed to the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq in the first place. I think this has become really an ethical, moral issue for many Americans, that if we withdraw unilaterally, there will be chaos and civil war in Iraq. And I think that that's a reasonable fear, given the understanding of the way we had an understanding of the situation in the previous period. But now, you know, we have a fundamental change that's taken place. The former minister, the former prime minister of the interim government, Ayad Lawi, has now declared this month that the civil war has already begun in Iraq. And what he's referring to is the violence of Shiites against Sunnis and Sunnis against Shiites, very specifically targeting people because of where they live and knowing that they are Shiites or Sunnis. This has already started, and it's the reason that this has spiraled out of control now is that until the Shiites gained power through the national election in January, they very carefully held their own hand. They restrained themselves in terms of Shiite violence against Sunnis. But once they had power, they began to use the power that they had over the interior ministry and the paramilitary and police forces to target Sunni communities and Sunni political and political military figures. And they are now carrying out operations which involve seizures of large numbers of people, torture, and in many cases killing, without any judicial process of any kind, of Sunnis in these neighborhoods. They have in fact taken over the function of targeting the Sunni neighborhoods from the Americans to a great extent. This has turned this into a very explicit Sunni-Shiite civil war. And this is what, of course, many Americans, as I say, have been afraid of. The problem is that it's already happening, and it's happening because of U.S. policy. The Bush administration has done nothing to discourage this kind of Sunni versus Shiite violence. In fact, they accept that what is happening is that they're turning over a counterinsurgency war to the Shiites and basically continuing this war indefinitely. And therefore, they've turned this argument on its head. The problem is that we already have the civil war. The only way to avert, to stop this, is for the United States to begin a process of negotiating peace, not just with the rebels, not just with the insurgents, but to bring both Sunni and Shiite leaders together to really begin a process of seriously reconciling the two communities, because that hasn't happened up to now.
It sounds almost as if what you're saying is that the violence level could increase the longer U.S. forces stay if what we're looking at is a sort of assumption of policy now by the Shiite-controlled military. And there have been some stories, too, of how reporters on the scene there have been targeted. Some are even calling these forces a kind of new death squad operating in Iraq.
Well, exactly. But there's no question that the Shiites have these paramilitary groups, the Badr Corps and now the Wolf Corps, well, what is very ominously called the Wolf Corps, which are made up of Shiite, predominantly Shiite people commanded by Shiite generals, and which carry out, as I say, extrajudicial operations, which involve really death squad type of activities. And let's be very clear about this. We know that the foreign terrorists in Iraq have, in fact, targeted Shiite mosques. They want to kill Shiites. There's no question about that. But they represent 2 to 5% at the best estimate of the forces arrayed against the government, against the Americans. The vast majority of Sunni resistance fighters in the past have had no interest in killing Shiites. The fear now, realistically, is that because the Shiite government now is clearly going into Sunni neighborhoods and carrying out these operations, death squad operations, that there will be inevitably a response by the Sunni resistance to target Shiites per se rather than police, paramilitary units, and military units. The great fear that people have had about the civil war is understandable, but people need to understand that what is happening right now is the beginning of what they feared, and the only way to stop it is really to negotiate peace. And the one chance to do that really is for the United States to step up and have a vision. It's really interesting that even the longtime CIA collaborator, Iyad Alawi, made the statement that the United States has no vision and no policy to do anything about this civil war. That, to me, is the most devastating critique that could be made of the Bush administration's policy.
Let's go back a little bit to the invasion itself and the fact that U.S. forces had hit lists, literally, of members of the Ba'athist Party close to Saddam Hussein. Now, we assumed, and I think this was cultivated, that the reason that the United States began then to attack more Iraqis and largely Sunni were targeted, that the reason for this was that they did not support the U.S. occupation or what was coming out of it with the interim governments, the coalition, provisional authority, etc. Is it possible, though, that America, in fact, is more correctly described as having aligned itself with the wrong forces in Iraq?
Yes, I would say, you know, the problem fundamentally from the beginning was that the United States had decided to basically, you know, revolutionize, to carry out revolutionary change in Iraq. It was going to destroy the very roots of this Sunni-based regime, which meant, you know, not just the top leaders, but people down to the second, third, and fourth echelons who were associated with the Ba'athist, with the Ba'ath Party. I mean, the roots of that policy, of course, are in the idea that the Ba'athists were pan-Arab nationalists, and we have to destroy the whole idea of pan-Arab nationalism in the Middle East. And of course, Iraq is the place where it needs to start. So, as a result of that, you know, there was from the beginning the idea that we would install a completely new regime. And of course, you know, this was supposed to be Ahmad Shalabi and his group of exiles who had worked closely with the U.S. government for years. The neocon advisors to Bush had very clear ideas about what was going to happen after the U.S. invaded. But you know, that government was to take power in a setting where we were, in fact, eliminating every vestige, the last vestiges of the previous regime, down to the grassroots level. Now, you know, that was just an absolutely fundamental mistake, because it meant that inevitably we were taking sides in this very old rivalry between Sunnis and Shiites in Iraq. You know, the Shiite majority versus the Sunni minority, and the Sunnis having been in power for decades. It was a very, very dangerous proposition. And it, in effect, it meant that sooner or later we were going to come up against a situation which was similar to Lebanon in 1983. And I don't know if your listeners remember what that issue was about in Lebanon, but the United States intervened in a confessional civil war between a Christian minority and an Islamic majority in Lebanon. And the inevitable result of that was that U.S. troops were targeted by terrorists, and they carried out a suicide bombing of a U.S. Marine base, killing 200 Marines. In a way, that sort of symbolizes the dangers of the United States' military intervention in that kind of situation, which is really, in its essence, a struggle between two ethnic or confessional groups rather than a struggle between democracy and terrorism, or democracy and totalitarianism, or anything, some ideological alternative. It's really, as Colin Powell said in 1983 in opposing the Lebanese intervention, it's like the United States putting its hand in a thousand-year-old beehive. And we are bound to create a disastrous situation in doing that.
We're talking with Gareth Porter. He's a historian and foreign policy expert, writing often for Foreign Policy in Focus. And Gareth Porter analyzed the problem of ending the Vietnam, Cambodian, and Philippine wars. So he is something of an expert at negotiations and how one achieves peace talks with warring sides. Let's talk just briefly about Lebanon, because many people have become aware that Lebanon is less than stable after a political change there, and we've just seen yet another bombing in Lebanon. Let's just talk about the wider issue of the Bush administration's theory that if the United States leaves, we will see a wider war process and sort of a terrorist home base consolidating in Iraq?
Well, you know, first of all, let me talk about the problem of the terrorist haven, because this really is the central legitimate security interest that the United States has in the Middle East. That is dealing with those bases that the Al-Qaeda has set up in Iraq in particular to train terrorists to go elsewhere in the Middle East and even, North America if they can do that. That is a legitimate interest, but of course an invasion and occupation of Iraq is exactly the wrong way to go about that. But now that we're there, what do we do about it? Well, you know, the present policy of trying to use military force to capture, to basically destroy the Al-Qaeda bases in Iraq has been a complete and total failure. The military admits that it has made no headway whatsoever. They've arrested, a few terrorists, but they have made no progress in reducing, let alone eliminating, the terrorist bases there. The only hope for ending the terrorist haven in Iraq, let's be clear on this, is to withdraw U.S. troops, either unilaterally, or I think, it's going to be politically more feasible and otherwise more favorable to end it through negotiations with not with Al-Qaeda, because that's not possible, but with the Sunni nationalist resistance to the occupation. The reason is this, that once you end the resistance by the Sunnis to the occupation, those people are going to have a natural inclination, a natural interest in ending the presence of foreign terrorists on their soil. Why is that? Because those foreign terrorists are Islamic extremists who have created chaos and conflict wherever they've gone within Iraq. Now, they have been able to continue their presence in Iraq because of this basically arrangement of convenience between the foreign terrorists and the Sunni resistance people, because the Al-Qaeda people have also been effective in carrying out car bombings against military targets, against U.S. Targets in Baghdad and elsewhere. But the moment the Sunni resistance people know the Americans are on their way out of Iraq for good, I guarantee those people are going to turn against the Al-Qaeda foreign fighters. And the reason is that they hate them, because the vast majority of the Sunni resistance people are secular Islamics who have no use whatsoever for the ideology that the Al-Qaeda people represent. So our best bet, our best route to ending the terrorist haven in Iraq is to make peace with the Sunni resistance, and we do that by beginning a peace process between the Shiite government and the Sunnis.
Gareth Porter, you've been researching possible exit strategies for the U.S. military getting out of Iraq. Now it seems the top American commander in Iraq is saying that he does believe there could be a fairly substantial pullout of U.S. troops next spring and summer. Tell me your first reaction to this, and I know, too, that with Donald Rumsfeld over in Iraq on a surprise visit, we may be seeing more coming out of Iraq about the war and Bush administration policy in the coming week.
Well, this clearly is a response to the perception in the Bush administration that they have to respond to public unease about the war. I mean, there's no question that there's been a buildup of frustration about the continued lack of any exit strategy, and the administration, of course, saying we don't have an exit strategy, we have a victory strategy, is in a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of public opinion. And I think they feel that they have to show that they're in a position to master the situation, and that saying that there will be a withdrawal in the spring is the only thing that they can do. I mean, they have to show some withdrawal. And, of course, this is reminiscent of the Nixon administration's policy in Vietnam of Vietnamization and of a gradual pullout. I mean, there's no doubt that they will begin that process. How long it's going to take, of course, is the question that ultimately, you know, there's no answer to at this point, and we won't know for some time.
Now, do you think that after these negotiations for peace between Sunni and Shiite political factions in Iraq would take place, that those two groups now could handle religious extremism? And I ask this specifically because I know that there are new forces emerging representing religious extremism in Iraq, and yet at the same time, people are talking about how the government, as it can be described as a government in Iraq right now, may actually be more aligned with Iran than the United States and George Bush ever thought it would be. So it's a kind of a circular problem, isn't it?
Well, that's absolutely right, that the present Shiite government is aligned ideologically and in terms of its Shiite religious bases with the Iranian clerical elite. You know, whatever differences there may be between their understanding of what kind of political regime they want to set up in Iraq and what the Iranian mullahs have set up in Iran, nevertheless, their political religious ideology is much closer to Iran than it is to American democracy. That's very clear. And there's no doubt that that is a serious problem in terms of trying to bring about a settlement between the Sunnis and the Shiites. One of the demands that the Sunnis are going to make, we know from the former electricity minister who I mentioned earlier, is that there must be a curb on Iraq's relations with Iran. I mean, the Sunnis are very concerned about religious extremism, the Shiite religious extremism of the present government. So that's going to be a serious problem to be negotiated. And let me say that I'm not trying to minimize the difficulty of trying to get the Shiites and Sunnis to sit down and really make peace. This is a very difficult problem. It's very deeply embedded in the history of particularly 20th century Iraq. And no one should consider this to be an easy matter. But if the United States does not say to the Shiite government, you must seriously negotiate peace, or we are going to have to make our own separate agreement for a timetable for withdrawal with the Sunni insurgents, the Shiite government's not going to do it. They are at this point have no interest in negotiating peace, and the reason for that is that they have state power in theory, but they don't have the military forces that they feel they need to overwhelm the Sunnis, which is their desire. That's their objective, and so they want several more years of U.S. occupation in order to be able to build up their military forces to the point where they will dominate the Sunnis militarily, and therefore they will not negotiate unless the United States really puts it to them as a choice between that and quick withdrawal by the United States. So the United States must basically take that position that we will either, you know, have a serious negotiation between the Shiites and the Sunnis, which is up to the Shiite government to initiate, or the United States will have to withdraw on its own, in conjunction with whatever arrangement we can make with the Sunni insurgents. But we will have to make a quick timetable for U.S. withdrawal as an alternative.
Talk about the August 15th deadline for setting up a new constitution and how those kinds of deadlines have worked in the past in terms of these two sides and also what the Bush White House has conveyed to Iraq and America.
Yes, this is a very strange deadline to say that Iraq must have a new constitution by August 15th is really quite bizarre because you have issues there that go, as I say, go very deeply into the history of violent conflict between Sunnis and Shiites. You know, mainly because the Sunnis held the minority Sunnis held complete state power and excluded the Shiites, and basically used secret police repression against the Shiites to make sure that they could stay in power. In order to have any real reconciliation between the two communities, you have to have an extended period of negotiation, and you have to deal with issues which are simply not on the table in the Constitutional Committee right now. So the idea that you're going to produce a meaningful constitution which will help to maintain peace or to bring peace between Sunnis and Shiites is simply a fantastic idea. Yeah, the fact that we have Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld in Iraq today telling the Iraqis that they must negotiate a constitution by August 15th simply tells me that the United States the Bush administration has no intention of trying to bring about any real reconciliation between Sunnis and Shiites. This is a fantastic idea. It's simply a fiction that there can be a constitution that will have any meaning under those circumstances.
Let's talk further about the problem of the administration's view on Saddam loyalists and foreign Islamic terrorists, and try to take a look at who might lead negotiations in Iraq, who might take a role in representing the United States and other parties involved.
Well, in order to have serious negotiations, you obviously have to have someone who is a real peacemaker. And I have to say that this administration undoubtedly is very shorthanded in that regard. It's very hard to think of who in the higher echelons of this administration has the capability to think about making peace between Sunnis and Shiites. It's so far from their notions of U.S. policy in that part of the world that it is almost impossible to imagine that anyone, even at the second level of this administration, could do that. The present U.S. ambassador in Iraq is somebody who is a hardline neoconservative advocate, and therefore is not going to be someone who is suited for this role. And that's why I really believe that our only hope for turning this policy around is that we could get responsible leaders in Congress to take a direct role in working with the administration on fashioning a new policy in Iraq. I think it's terribly important that that happen. And that has to be based on a redefinition of the problem in Iraq. It is not a matter of, you know, protecting or defending a democracy against terrorism. It is a matter of making peace between two confessional religious groups. And therefore, it requires a totally different set of skills, a different perspective. We need to reach people in Congress who are concerned about the failure of U.S. policy in Iraq, but who may not understand why it's failing. We need to get to them and get them to craft a different policy and to really put some pressure on the administration to follow that policy. And I think it would be important to have congressional people involved in a negotiating process, to have them directly involved, as they have been in certain other international negotiations in the past.
Gareth Porter, sum up for us this finding of yours and how it establishes for you that it would be in the interest of fighting terrorism, in the interest of reducing the force and power of Islamic extremists, of terrorists, to have the U.S. pull out of Iraq?
We need to have a third alternative to the choices which we've been given of simply unilateral withdrawal, which is not acceptable to the U.S. Congress. And despite the overwhelming majority of the American people who want to get out somehow, and an indefinite stay in Iraq, which the administration still has as its policy. And the reason that we need that third alternative is it's the only way that we're going to be able to deal with the two major problems of getting out, one being the terrorist haven problem, the other one being the Civil War problem. The Civil War has already begun. The only way that we can do anything to avert that is to use our present military presence as a leverage on the Shiite government to start negotiations by telling them that we will withdraw on our own timetable if they don't negotiate. I believe that they will begin negotiations if we do that. This is also the only way that we're going to be able to essentially solve the terrorist haven problem. By making peace with the insurgents, they will then themselves turn against the foreign terrorists in Iraq. And I believe that if peace negotiations actually begin, the foreign terrorists will begin to get out on their own because they will know that their time is coming to an end.
Gareth Porter is an independent historian and foreign policy analyst. He has published studies of negotiations to end wars in Vietnam, Cambodia, and the Philippines. His latest book is Perils of Dominance, Imbalance of Power and the Road to War in Vietnam, out by California University Press in 2005. Gareth Porter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Dory.
Gareth Porter's research paper on what he calls the third choice in Iraq, a responsible exit strategy, appears in the September issue of Middle East Policy. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. TalkNation.org for a transcript of this program and a discussion about it. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS Stores, Radio for the People at the University of Connecticut. WHUS.org.